John Beaver joins us again today. He's a frequent guest, the president of Phase 3 Advisory Services. Okay, let's see where the Fed is going to go today. Word we got from our friend David Hochberg was yesterday, bet on 3. I said if the over-under's 3.5, he took the under. I hoped for the over. John Williams here, and so too is our friend John Beaver, a frequent guest on the show. He is the financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services. Hi, John.
Well, hi, John.
Boy, lots to unpack with you today. I was looking at some of your notes, and there's a lot going on there. Let's just start with this, if I may. David Hochberg and I were yesterday talking about the Fed. I said, okay, the line is 3.5. You taking the over or the under on rate cuts?
So me, I'm going under, and I'm going to say 2. I came into the year at 3. I'm actually thinking now it may only be 2, and that could be one of the disappointments for the market this year.
Yeah, well, that's disappointing right now. Why do you think only 2?
Well, if we take a look at the economy, it's still really in pretty good shape. To almost everyone's surprise, including the Fed, we've avoided a recession in 2023 and likely in 2024. The consumer is still in good shape. Their spending, a report that came in from Square, actually I should say Block, looking good. So we've got the consumer still in the saddle. While we had credit card delinquencies rising, they've actually stabilized at this point in time. And the latest reading on inflation is a little bit hotter. Came in at 0.3% versus 0.2%. And if you annualize 0.3%, you get 3.6% for the year. That's a long way from the Fed's 2% target, almost twice as much. So not saying that we're in a bad situation with inflation. It's just we're not getting to the Fed's target. And they've said very clearly, very often, even in this last time, they want to see inflation persistently at 2%. That's probably 6 months of inflation. So I'm even thinking maybe not even June or July. We may be looking at two rate cuts more in the fourth quarter, late third to fourth quarter.
They're never going to raise it again. I mean, that's not part of anybody's equation, right?
Well, it's funny that it's not part of anybody's equation. What if the economy were to strengthen some more? They might have to rise. We all think they're not going to, but it's really going to be driven by this economy. And, this is very similar to the 1960s. In the 1960s, we were looking at, are we going to have a recession when we take a look at the inversion of the yield curve? So when I go back and read some of the writings about that time, there was some concern about that because when the yield curve inverts, we think there's going to be a recession. And actually, it took quite a while in the 60s. It went 9 years without a recession in a rising inflationary period. It wasn't super inflation, but it was starting to heat back up. And actually, it was a 48-month lag from when the yield curve inverted to when the recession finally hit in 1970. We're only 16 months into the recession time clock on an inverted yield curve. So, maybe we strengthen by the end of the year.
So I suppose the end of this would be inflation, but walk me through what the problem would be if, given as healthy as the economy is, the Fed lowered rates. What would go wrong? What would the problem be with that?
Well, here's the situation. Inflation really hurts the lower and middle the worst. And that's the biggest concern that the Fed has. They've said that too, that is their biggest concern is inflation. So if the economy does heat up, then we know that the Fed is definitely going to put the brakes on by raising the rates and probably more dramatically. So while it's not a bad thing to have the economy growing, it's a bad thing to have the economy growing too much. And long term, here's the problem. It's the $34 trillion worth of government debt that we have to pay interest on. So when inflation heats up, interest rates heat up, that increases the debt service on the debt. And that ultimately is the biggest problem.
Just thinking, so if you lower the rates, though, that spurs the economy, spurs the housing market, it spurs everything. That then what? Generates more income and more money chasing fewer goods and services, raises the costs. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it exactly. And then as those rates go up, and you have to look at what's the natural interest rate. The natural interest rate tends to follow the inflation rate. So if we want to keep the inflation rate low, if we want to keep the interest rate low on the government debt, the Fed has to keep the inflation rate low, which means they can't let the economy get too hot.
Should we then be satisfied with where we are? I mean, there's no number that's glaringly bad anymore, right?
Right. No, I think this is actually a good place. And I think that the Fed can actually sit at this level for quite a while because the economy is digesting and is dealing with these rates where they're at right now. And the Fed, they're going to sit tight, too, until they actually see a reason to lower the rates. Now, there is an argument to be made. They have to lower the rates before they see anything bad happening. They have to stay ahead of it. So they got to get the timing just right. And that's why I'm glad they're making that decision and not you or I, John.
Okay, we'll pause here because you also did point out, though, that it's an election year. And so that means X, and I'll let you fill in the blank in a minute. It's 12:15. That's John Beaver. This is John Williams. And 12:19, Wintrust Business Lunch. The electric vehicle business is part of our business today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's in the next half hour. John Beaver's here, financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services, talking about the zone we're in right now. It's actually a pretty good place economically, but don't expect the Fed to lower rates anytime soon or much at all this year. But you also said that this year is an election year. So, John, what does that mean?
So in election years, the market tends to be volatile. Usually ends up by the end of the year, it's higher, but there's volatility. And that fits really any year. We can expect a 10% drop anytime in any given year. In fact, last year it came on time, September, October, and then we rallied from there. Usually in an election year, you get that volatility occurring right about now through the summertime. But as we get closer to the election, the market kind of sees what may be happening. And really, the market just wants to know what's going to happen. It can work with either candidate, either side winning. It just wants to know. That's how the market operates. But we have an interesting opportunity this year that's shaped up because of the divergence in the performance last year. And this has to do with the S&P 500. So we had the S&P 500 last year up 24%, and we have the S&P 500 last year up 11%. And no, that's not doublespeak, John. It's actually two different ways of calculating the index.
Right, right. Weighted and not weighted, in other words, right?
That's exactly right. So cap weight assigns each company a slice of the pie based on the size that they are. So right now, the largest six companies make up a whole 25% of the S&P 500. The rest of the companies make up the rest of it. And so when you get this period of time where the largest dominate the performance, like last year, NVIDIA was worth one-third of the return of the S&P 500, one company. And, of course, it's continuing on this year with NVIDIA. But the equal weight last year was up only 11%. That's a 13% differential between the two. And that's always notable because when that happens, we usually end up with a rough market down the road. What that means is that those two indices will converge. Your worst performing cap weight will do better than the worst performing equal weight will do better than the cap weight. And over time, your equal weight always beats the cap weight over time. So we think there's a great opportunity right now to make sure you're getting into equal weight. And we have the same situation with the small cap. Think about this. The last 5 years, we've had a significant divergence here. Small cap up about 30%, equal weight up about 50%, the cap weight up about 80%. That's a big differential there where the small cap and the equal weight could make that up maybe over the next 10 years and have some good returns.
Wonder how many of us, though, have money in some funds that we picked out of a pie chart with some advisor or on a website on our own, and we don't know if we're in an equal weight. And I don't know. So how do I discover that, and then what do I do about that?
Yeah, so the vast majority of S&P 500 funds are cap weight. The vast majority of target date funds and 401ks are cap weighted. So it's really hard to get into an equal weight. Usually the fund will indicate if it's an equal weight. So do some reading on the fund. And the other thing is, in a 401k, you might not be able to get directly to an equal weight fund, but what you can do is usually you have access to a small cap fund, and you could use that as a surrogate and add that into your target date fund.
Talk to me about student debt a little bit.
Yeah, so some news the last couple of days about 153,000 borrowers having their loans canceled. This is under the newer SAVE program. SAVE stands for Savings on a Valuable Education. It's actually a narrow set, though. These borrowers have to have less than $12,000 borrowed and at least 10 years of payments in already, and then those loans, whatever's left, is going to be wiped out. They will pay tax on the forgiven amount. But really, these repayment programs have, they're really a good opportunity. They're income dependent, And which plan is best for each borrower really does depend. And it's not just what's best today. It's what's best over the next 20 to 25 years. So it's really important to work with an advisor and to get your 20 to 25 year projection done so you can actually decide which plan is better. And really, it's just a ratio of your amount of student debt to your income. And because it's a ratio, then many professionals, which is with advanced degrees and have a lot of debt, they can actually benefit from this too. I don't necessarily support this strategy, but if the government approves it, we're going to use it, you know, for our clients.
I think you're not alone in that. I think a lot of us think that's crazy, but they did it for us, so yep. You're foolish not to take advantage of it. What do you make of Governor Pritzker's budget proposal?
Probably going to pass $53 billion. Here are the interesting things. Where does the additional revenue come from? They're more than doubling the sports gambling tax, and they're going to be continue to limit the net losses that larger companies can take. But what I think is interesting is they're extending the pension ramp. Now, what's the pension ramp? This is the period of time to where the government, where the state of Illinois is actually fully funding the pensions, which they should have been doing all along. So they're extending that ramp 3 more years. So now rather than getting to that point by 2045, it's 2048.
I don't even know what 2048 is. That's a year?
Yeah, that's a year, 2048. So instead of getting to that point by 2045, they got to be there by 2048. It doesn't really make much difference.
So you're saying it will minimize the payments so that over the next 24 years, we will finally fully fund the pension rather than the expedited ramp of 43 years, 42 years,
yeah,
whatever.
You did the math right there. So that, you know, that puts a little bit less spending into the plan and allows them to actually get the keep within a balanced budget, which I wish our federal government would operate in a balanced budget fashion. You know, and if I could borrow your king for a day, John, I would balance the U.S. budget and let interest rates float to their natural rate.
What does that mean? You'd balance the budget, which would mean raise taxes and or cut services, right?
Yes, some combination.
And then what would happen as a result of that?
Well, we would be on a more steady path and a sustainable path because this overspending, this deficit is like a drug. You need more to get the same high, or it's like cranking up the credit cards to pay your other credit cards, or like the gambler doubling down. Those are just not good long-term strategies. And then the Fed wouldn't have to mess with interest rates so much because we could let the interest rates float to where they naturally would be.
See, and where would that be, John?
Yeah, so today the short-term rate might be like 3.5% is where it might be. And not quite sure yet on the 10-year Treasury. We may be about where it would need to be right now, but it would be a lot easier to, in our industry to take a look at what's going on and figure out what makes sense and even determining what's best for the market, because two things drive stock prices: earnings and interest rates. Those are the two main things. If earnings are going up, stock prices will be going up. And then interest rates, when interest rates are going down, stock prices go up. But when interest rates are going up, stock prices go down. And right now we're getting this upward pressure in interest rates again, which is making a little bit of challenge for the market. Even though it's at a new high, it's struggling at this point.
John Beaver is a financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services, phase3advisory.com, and number 3 in the middle, phase3advisory.com. John, always interesting. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks for having me on.
It's 1227. WGN Radio News is next.